This is The Book and the Spade, a report on the latest discoveries and developments in biblical archaeology. Here's your host, Gordon Govier.
The Dead Sea Scrolls are a perpetual topic on this program, the most important discovery of biblical archaeology in the last century. And we're back at it today because our listeners have the opportunity to view some of the scrolls right now on display at the Museum of the Bible in Washington, D.C. And we're talking with Dr. Bobby Duke, the Chief Curatorial Officer of the Museum of the Bible. And given that this is the Museum of the Bible, having the Dead Sea Scrolls seems like a no-brainer.
Absolutely. These are the oldest biblical text ever discovered. And it fits well with even just telling our story that we want to show the impact of the Bible throughout history. And the Dead Sea Scrolls, when they were discovered in 47, begins that journey of having our most important manuscripts.
One thing that's kind of curious about this, I guess, the Dead Sea Scrolls are written in the Hebrew text, which means most people can't read these documents, but they still come to see them.
In fact, you have Hebrew, Aramaic, and Greek that were found in the 11 caves at Qumran. But you're right, most of our visitors, you're seeing 2,000-year-old pieces of leather, but it's the proximity of something that close to the fact of reading and seeing biblical texts that were at the time of Christ. They were here when the disciples and Jesus were walking the earth.
Would you say that one of the chief values of showing these biblical texts is that they really show that the Bible hasn't changed in the last 2,000 years?
No, they give us our earliest manuscripts. And when you compare the Masoretic texts that were our best Hebrew manuscripts before the scrolls were found with what we have at Qumran, you see a very high level of fidelity in that transmission process. Yes, there are variants, but most of the variants can be explained away just by misunderstanding a yod or a vav, some of these Hebrew letters that can be easily confused. But no major doctrines are undercut by the discovery of the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Most of the items that you have on display are smaller fragments of the scrolls, but I understand the great Isaiah scroll is on display in Jerusalem right now. For people who can read Hebrew, you can go up and read that scroll, and it's about the same as the Bible presents it in modern English.
No, absolutely. In fact, I was able to be there when the exhibit for the great Isaiah scroll opened back in February. It was great to see this scroll that has not been fully displayed since the 1960s, late 60s. And the Museum of the Bible, along with the Green family of Oklahoma City, were able to help with the climate-controlled case that will be housing that during this four-month exhibit there in Jerusalem.
How do people react when they see these scrolls? The reason I ask that is because the first time the scrolls ever went on display in the United States was apparently at Duke University back around 1950. They had a chance to show some of the scrolls, and they even had a chance to buy the scrolls, but apparently they turned down that offer. But the story goes that one person who saw the display fainted when they were told that these were documents that dated to the time of Jesus.
Yeah, so that in the 1950s, when you had four of those original Cave 1 documents displayed at Duke University, it had actually already been at the Library of Congress a little before that. So there was about a year and a half from 49 to 51 tour of the scrolls. And it was those four scrolls that were eventually offered for sale in the Wall Street Journal. It's a great story of Dead Sea Scrolls being sold in the classifieds. And that showed up in 1954. And those four scrolls eventually were purchased by the State of Israel. And they are part of the Shrine of the Book there in Jerusalem, which included the great Isaiah scroll. So the Isaiah scroll was on display in the United States one time before, back at that Duke University Library of Congress exhibit. But I would say our average guest, again, there is that sense at times of being underwhelmed just because it's looking at little pieces of leather on a language that you don't understand until you unpack that story, until you say this was part of a much larger scroll that would have had the book of Genesis or Exodus. And you are looking at material that is 2,000 years old. For our country here, we're celebrating our 250th anniversary this year. And when you think of how short of time period that is compared to 2,000 years, I would say our average guest is just blown away knowing they're looking at texts that were from the time when you had, again, the New Testament being written.
Yeah. Do you have an actual collection of comments of people to make about the scrolls when they see them?
So we do have our customer survey that goes out and people have commented on how they love the exhibit. I think for me, one of the most touching parts of this exhibit is the exhibit ends right at a massive stone that came from the Western Wall that was destroyed by the Romans. And it's actually situated and displayed in a way where people actually can leave notes, just like you would if you were at the Western Wall in Jerusalem. And to see people standing there, leaving notes right there, prayers, thoughts, and others, just let you know that this is a real spiritual experience for people to see these texts that are our oldest texts ever discovered.
If you just joined us, we're talking with Dr. Bobby Duke, the Chief Curatorial Officer of the Museum of the Bible, about the Dead Sea Scrolls display that's now at the Museum of the Bible. So that's something that people can actually touch, an artifact that people can actually touch, this part of the Western Wall that's on display.
Yep. So there are two kind of very tactile items. One is that Western Wall stone. It was the hardest item to get into the exhibit, 4,000 pounds. So we had to find a special structural engineer to make sure we weren't going to destroy our floors from the loading dock up to the fifth floor gallery. But we have another stone, but it is actually one of the paving stones from 2,000 years ago that was part of the pilgrim route that went from the Pools of Siloam up to the Temple Mount area. And it's encouraged by our partners at the Israel Antiquities Authority to actually stand on that stone. And that's another one of those pieces when you think of the reaction to the scrolls themselves, but also the reaction when people are standing on that stone and think, I'm standing on a stone that's 2,000 years old that would have been part of the road back during the time of the New Testament and before.
Yeah, that's one of the thrills of biblical archaeology, when you can have history that you can actually hold in your hand or stand on. It touches the soul.
Absolutely, absolutely.
The display that you have at the Museum of the Bible helps people understand the importance and significance. There are other things, other artifacts from Israel, such as the Magdala Stone, that's also part of this.
Correct. The exhibit itself isn't just about scrolls. It's really telling a whole swath of Second Temple history. It begins up in the Galilee. It has a focus on the site of Magdala, where the Magdala Stone was discovered. This limestone table that most would say is used for rolling out Torah scrolls on Sabbath. It has all the decorations around it that remember the temple that was in Jerusalem and standing at the time when the Magdala Stone was carved. And then the exhibit wanders through all the archaeological remains from Jerusalem before it gets to Qumran. So it really tells this whole story of what was life and what was travel and what was the literature of the time when the scrolls were being produced.
You are also a Dead Sea Scroll scholar. It's something that you did before you became a part of the staff at the Museum of the Bible. What does your scroll research involve?
When I was a graduate student on a Rotary Fellowship at Hebrew University in 2000-2001 was when the doors opened for me to continue down the road of Dead Sea Scrolls research. That year, I had the Who's Who of Dead Sea Scrolls Scholarship at Hebrew University. So Emmanuel Tove and Michael Stone. James Kugel was on loan from Harvard that semester. Avi Hurwitz, who one of the most amazing people who focused on Hebrew from the time of the scrolls. So that opened the door for me to go to UCLA the next year. And that's what I did my doctorate on. And I focused specifically on one of the Aramaic texts that's found from K4 in five copies. So any text that is found in multiple copies obviously was read quite often by the group there at Qumran. So the text I worked on focused on Amram, who is Moses' father in scripture. So there was 2,000 years ago kind of a genre that developed of taking a biblical figure that was not well known and then creating almost a whole literature around that person just to answer some of those what if questions we all have when we read scripture. So what was Moses' father like, Amram? In the biblical text, he's kind of just in a genealogy, connecting from Levi all the way to Moses. Fascinating material. And for the scholarly world, this non-biblical material was probably ultimately the most important because it did fill in a gap in some ways, very little known literature of Judaism from that time, from say 300-400 BC to 2nd, 3rd century AD when you have the Mishnah. So it really filled in this gap to show the diversity of literature 2,000 years ago.
And you also are a part of a lecture series that is in conjunction with this display. Is that what you're talking about or something else?
the lecture series, and we try to find various lecturers who have expertise with whatever exhibit we have at the museum. So Dead Sea Scrolls, we had some lecturers with Megiddo. We'll have some lecturers with our America's 250th initiatives we're doing at the museum. But this actually coming Sunday with Larry Schiffman from New York University and I are going to be doing a lecture on the languages and literature of Qumran. So Hebrew, Aramaic, Greek, and then the diversity of genres that show up in those languages. So I'll be focusing on the Aramaic and Greek. And Professor Schiffman will be focusing on the Hebrew as we look at the diversity. And it really is quite diverse because there are documents that are biblical. There are documents that are administrative. There are sales documents. You have genealogies, but you also have biblical and then other non-biblical texts.
So those three languages, Greek, Hebrew, and Aramaic, would be spoken by most people who lived in the biblical world in the first century?
So I would say the, say, average farmer somewhere in the Galilee or elsewhere probably was mostly proficient in Aramaic because it was the trade language, but also liturgically would have read Hebrew if they were Jewish. Greek was probably a mix when it came to how many people could have spoken those. But what the scrolls do show us is that Hebrew didn't disappear. I think there's at times a belief that Hebrew somewhat kind of disappeared and was only used for liturgical reasons. But even some of the documents at Qumran showed that it was still an active language. I think the group at Qumran not only had Hebrew as their primary language, but they even saw it as kind of the holy language. And they were very careful, even in their scribal practices and the way they wrote Hebrew.
Dead Sea Scroll research continues even now here 80 years later. There's a lot of new things that are being discussed. And one of the most recent stories was this project from the University of Groningen submitting the scrolls to AI analysis. Some of those scrolls came back with different dates than had been assigned to them by the paleographers that studied them.
So when it comes to scribal hand, we know that there were dozens, if not scores, of scribes that can be identified by the different ways they wrote letters. Yes, they would be taught to write letters a certain way, but we all have our own unique thumbprint, so to speak, on how we write things. AI can be a wonderful tool. The early scroll scholars, as you mentioned, paleography. I mean, it was the way that scrolls were dated, that how a letter or a group of letters were written could show, was it 2nd century BC, 1st century BC, was it 1st century AD? And in general, I would say that there was a lot of confidence in that. And I will say, I think ultimately AI and DNA will show, and carbon 14 will show that there is a lot of similarities to what was suggested by paleography and this. But there have been ones that have pushed the date back a little farther.
Dead Sea Scrolls research continues almost 80 years after the original discovery, and new discoveries about the scrolls are still being made. Bobby Duke, the chief curatorial officer at the Museum of the Bible, told us that not only are Dead Sea Scrolls on exhibit, but the museum in Washington, D.C. still has the Megiddo Mosaic, also on exhibit. In our next program, he'll explain what's unique about that. We have a link to information about the exhibit on our website at radioscribe.com. There you'll also find information about our Biblical Archaeology News magazine, Artifacts, as well as breaking news videos from the Israel Antiquities Authority. That's at radioscribe.com. I'm Gordon Govier. Thanks for tuning in. Join us again next time for more Backgrounders on the Bible through Biblical Archaeology on The Book in the Spade.
The Book in the Spade is produced by Scribe Media. For information on biblical archaeology resources or obtaining a copy of this program on CD, go to our website at radioscribe.com.